This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Welcome to the Hope Centre, where real stories meet real conversations about mental health, growth and hope. I'm Anna, and we're here to share, connect and remind you that you're not alone. Let's dive in. Kia ora and welcome to the Hope Centre podcast, a project put together by Life Matters Suicide Prevention Trust with the help of ORFM and Anytime Fitness in Dunedin. If you have any topics that you'd like us to cover or are interested in being a guest on the podcast, please reach out to us on our Facebook page or email admin@lifematters.org.nz. Kia ora, I'm Anna.
And this is Omri.
We're both senior peer support workers at Life Matters and we'll be your hosts for this conversation about hope, healing and lived experience.
Today is an exciting, as always, exciting topic and people to have. We are talking to two other peer supporters from Life Matters. One, our listeners are already well aware and familiar with.
Repeat.
We call her the 90s Chicago Bulls with the three-peat. And also, with Noosa. Welcome back, Noosa.
Thank you for having me again.
Again, we're loving having you back. And for the first time, Cleo. Welcome, Cleo.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for both coming along today. And yeah, I'd like to put an invite out for, we'll start with Cleo, if that's okay, to introduce yourself to our listeners.
Hi. So, I think I should come out also as Cleo. That's my actual name.
Yes.
But at work, my nickname is Cleo because our manager's also called Claire. And it's too small a town for two Claires. So
picturing like a Western standoff.
Yeah. This Claire lost.
I just deferred right from the start. So I've become in this work after one of my brother's suicide. And my attraction started off in suicide bereavement, supporting other people in suicide bereavement. And, I'm just finding myself really taking to the broader work of supporting people in mental distress.
Awesome. Thank you. Noosa, do you have anything else you would like to share about yourself?
No, just the... First of all, just like take this opportunity for inviting me again to say thank you, guys. So warm Pacific greetings, Talofalava. My name is Noosa. I am one of the core peer supporters at the Hope Centre. Been there for almost 2 years. Feels like a lifetime, but love the work that we do there. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah, again, thank you so much, both of you, for coming on. And stepping into the studio.
Thank you for having us.
I'm sure it's not the last time either.
No. There are plenty of opportunities. So for all of our guests that we have, we get them to leave a question for the next guests. And you had the privilege of having been left a question by Karen Cossens, who I know both of you know. And she asked, what is the creative practice you both enjoy?
Well, I'll start off. So creative. Now, first of all, I would never think I was a creative person because I'm so boring. But I had a look on Google before I came on. Just kind of see if anything came up that I could like resonate to. So I'm a big me time person. So with all the kids that I have, I like to just get out into my car, turn on the music and go for a drive. And nature would be my thing that calms me down. And even though Dunedin is boring, but we have great views. We are surrounded by beautiful mountains, beautiful scenery. So, yeah, just taking that in. That's me.
Awesome.
Creative.
Nice.
What about you, Cleo?
Yeah, similar. I love writing about adventures in nature and taking photos as well. So non-fiction writing. I write a column for the ODT about local walks. Yeah.
Didn't know that. It's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, and it's I love it because I just go to all different places. Like I've lived in Dunedin most of my life, and so far I think I'm up to about 63 different locations of different walks.
Nice.
And there's still others to go to. And so the walk itself, like what you're saying, Noosa, I really enjoy that process. And then, you know, I like taking photos when I'm there too. And it sort of stops you, makes you really look. And then going home and writing about it, and you get to relive it. And it can just take absolute ages. And I sort of come to after a wee while and realise I've been sitting there writing. Yeah, really love it.
It's really cool. And yeah, for those of our listeners who don't know, Cleo is a very good photographer as well. You can look at our banner on our newsletter and also on our website for some of Cleo's great photos. Of is it Blue Lagoon? Not Blue Lagoon.
Oh.
Out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Waikawaiti.
Yeah.
Hawkesbury, I think.
Hawkesbury Lagoon, that's it, yeah. Very cool photos.
Very cool. Thank you. Interested if you've got an answer, Omri, because I've talked a lot about creativity on the podcast, but I'm curious if you've got an answer for this question.
Yeah, as all of us know by now, again, nature is very important for me. But I think a lot of where my creativity comes in is, really bouncing off weird ideas or games that just play as well. Did this growing up and also do it with my partner now of kind of like, we'll just be out in nature and going, okay, I'm thinking of a movie or I'm thinking of a song or I'm thinking of something. Try and guess what it is. Essentially just 20 questions. But being as vague as possible. Or getting as niche as possible.
Cool. I like that.
Keeps the brain ticking.
It does. Keeps it active.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. As I said, I think I've talked a lot about creativity on the podcast. I think mine's more literal, but I love doing art and I love colouring. I like, and I like watercolouring and water painting and stuff. And that's not saying that I'm good at it, because I think being really good at something and enjoying it are two different things. And Karen stressed this too. You don't have to be a world famous artist to do it if it's bringing you joy. I've gone through phases of crocheting and I've tried knitting and making things out of clay. So mine's very literal in terms of creativity. Cool. Today we're going to be covering maybe a wee bit of a heavier topic on the podcast. I feel like we've kept it relatively light and quite inspiring and, I don't know, just quite light. And while we are going to share a message of hope through this, I think the overarching themes are a wee bit heavier. We are going to be covering the topic of suicide and suicide bereavement in today's episode in a way that is tasteful and safe to listen to for the listeners. While grief can be heavy, we hope to highlight the pain and the beauty, ultimately spreading messages of hope through the podcast. If you need support after listening or during listening, please reach out to Life Matters on 027 240 0114. You can also reach out to Lifeline at 0800 543 354 or free text 1737 for after hours support. Yeah, as I said, we're kind of going to have a group discussion about some of these things. We're not going to share things we don't feel comfortable sharing, or, you know, we're going to take it how it goes. But if you're listening and this topic is quite sensitive for you, please look after yourself. Please, you know, you don't have to listen if it's too much. We're here for you. And if you need to reach out, please do.
I'll say, yeah, also just to be clear, there won't be any discussion of means or methods. It'll be, as we've talked about before, as peer support, it's a lived experience. So it's all about those feelings that that we have sat in on how we've worked through things and how we have come to understand grief, either via suicide or grief in general.
Cool. I'm going to invite our guests, Noosa and Cleo, to share a wee bit about their experience. Also, I think to highlight, these guys do a fantastic job of facilitating our bereavement group. I feel like I've learned a lot about bereavement and a lot about grief through these guys. So I'm really excited to learn a wee bit more.
Cool. Yeah, so I can start off. In previous podcasts, I've kind of already mentioned what's brought me here at Life Matters. Being a peer supporter, it is using our lived experience of mental distress to support our community. And mental health is real in our community. Suicide is a word that makes people feel different and are too scared to say because we don't want to make people feel uncomfortable. But the reality is that it's happening all over our country and it's sad. So being in a space where I'm able to share my story and support people in our community with mental health and suicide bereavement is so special. So, 2021, the father of my younger two kids suicided. Like I said, mental health is real. And I lost my mum at 14 to cancer. I lost my dad to an asthma attack when I was 24. I lost my son when I was 25, but he was 3 months. So grief, you know, is almost like a normal thing for me. But when the suicide hit in 2021, my first emotion was anger. Anger because, like, from the bereaved side, it was like, why? Why we have kids? You are such a great father. Things like that. So now I'm in the work that I'm in now. It is highlighting more how important the work that we do is really, really important. Sorry, I just said important twice. But
that's how important it is.
Anna said, we are facilitators for the bereavement group. It is once a month, so grateful to have a space where I can come together with a group of people where we are able to voice our feelings and emotions and feel okay about it. But that's a bit of my story with how I got into the work that I'm doing now. But yeah, suicide is real.
And thank you so much for sharing, Noosa, and really hearing about how intense that grief can be, and really appreciate you mentioning anger as one of those first emotions, because those emotions are quite complex.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't understand or think about them if they haven't been in contact with losing someone to suicide or aren't aware of that. To validate those emotions are normal to feel.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Wondering, Cleo, are you happy sharing as well?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yep. Yeah, so my experience with suicide was the year after yours, Noosa, 2022. So, my brother, I've got three brothers, and this brother, we were a year and a half apart in age. What can I say? There's just so much to say. What specifically do you reckon you'd like me to talk about there?
I think, along the lines of, what feels comfortable for you, but what were those first initial stages for you like?
It was just like, it's like being in a horror show. Like the sudden, life is completely different. Nightmare stuff, really. because there's not just the fact that this person is dead, which is, you know, none of us can compute that, I think, when we hear about a death. The brain doesn't quite understand it initially. But there was also the nature of his death, and also the fact that he would have felt so jolly awful to have felt compelled to do that. So great distress for his distress. Yeah, speaking of initially, I just remember screaming, and I remember panting, actually, sort of as if I was on a big run. Yeah, that's just the start. Yeah.
And I think that really highlights that distress that you were talking about before, you know, that distress for his distress, and again, being people that we care about and love, it's hard to imagine them in those spaces. Yeah, thank you. Thank you both very much for, yeah, for sharing that. And I think it's a little eye opener, for people to understand as well. And I'm, mentioned distress and anger. I'm wondering how y'all began to navigate those feelings and that grief after losing someone to suicide.
Yeah, so of course, after anger came sadness, and then sadness then turned into anger. So it was pretty much a 2-year period of those emotions, because I'm looking at my two younger kids thinking, damn, there'll be a time that I'll actually have to say that to them, you know. We were talking about that to Cleo the other day, just how do we deal with this with our kids, and like with your nieces and your nephews, for example. So my kids have been my motivation. So throughout this grief process, they're the ones that have kept me going. So, yeah. But understanding that mental health is real. Can I just add that as well? And like you mentioned, to know that they got into that dark place and that was it, it hurts. And with the mahi that we're doing now, we almost can feel them. Can I say that? Because it feels weird, but, you know, it's like, hang on, no. I'll bring my story in and I'll tell you the reasons why. Because when you're in that spot, you think that nobody cares and no one's going to see. But the reality is that the effect on everyone around you is real.
I'm really hearing that it was a lot of navigating, was feeling those feelings and really letting yourself feel them. To be able to understand them more.
Yeah, because one of the other feelings was blame, which comes along with the whole thing, because you're blaming yourself, then you're getting blamed from others, and it makes it even more difficult, but more of a reason why I needed to get out into nature, go for these drives to adjust myself and be like, no, I do not care what people say. I know what happened, and that's all that matters.
Yeah. Absolutely spot on. Good on you.
And I know that he was a great guy, and he was a great dad, and that's all that matters.
How about for yourself, Cleo?
First of all, yes, that blame thing, the self-blame, is something that I think is universal for people bereaved by suicide, even quite distantly bereaved, if you say that, the questioning of oneself and what one could have done, you know, that's a big part of it. I mean, I could go into that, about what I think about that. I'm happy to do that, but, or I could...
Yeah, I mean, first I'm wondering, how do you feel like you navigated that blame?
It's a funny thing, because for me, I do carry that, but I also know that this was my brother's distress. And I have fantasies about being there and like physically fighting him from doing it.
Shoulda, woulda, couldas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also I think it's a lot bigger than, you know, something I could have done.
Mm.
Yeah.
To summarise that. So to come back to the original, dealing with the complex emotions, for me it was just mega real anxiety, basically, and horror. I didn't have the words for it at the time. It was sort of, I went into this quite altered state of consciousness, I suppose, very unpleasant one, where, look, the phrase I read in the book later is suicide assaults our assumptive world.
Mm.
And, yeah, you know, and that means everything's upside down, topsy-turvy. Everything that you thought was possible or impossible now is the opposite. So how I actually navigated it initially was really full-on physical work at my brother's house. He had a big section. And I think I was trying to fix something. So I got out there with the pickaxe and, you know, dug out some gorse and some steps and stuff like that. And, yeah, oscillated with, I think, probably periods of just really just, like, staring blankly at a wall. And then back home, you know, being in my onesie on the couch for ages. Initially,
Yes.
But that word navigating, we're still navigating.
I think it's an ongoing journey.
Grief.
Exactly. And I like, you know, what you're saying about self-blame. I think briefly on the podcast I've touched on it, but I've got, I lost a friend to suicide in 2023, and that relationship was quite complicated at the time. So we weren't necessarily on speaking terms. And after that person passed away, that self-blame was so strong because I thought, why didn't I reach out to that person? Like, it was silly why we weren't talking at the time, and it was really, really complicated. And that self-blame was, I mean, still it might poke its head in every now and again, but like over time, I think something Cuba said to me, which I've shared this on the podcast a couple of times, but it's one of those things that is going to stick in my brain for the rest of my life. And that is, you did the best that you can with the information you had at the time. At the time, I didn't necessarily know that person was struggling as much as they were. And while she said that to me a couple of days after, and it didn't necessarily stick all of this time, you know, of all of this time passed, it's the thought at the forefront of my mind.
Also, as a friend of mine said to me when I discussed this with him, who experiences bipolar disorder, he put it really well. He said, it's not about you, you know? I think mental distress, you know, is heaps bigger than one relationship we might have with someone.
Yeah.
Further to that, suicide can be caused by a multiplicity of different factors. It's natural for us to question ourselves. But it doesn't mean that we should be.
And it's very much challenging those thoughts as well, and kind of links in with the kind of next question that I was thinking of was, what strategies or practices helped you manage those emotions? And I appreciate before, Cleo, you talked about sometimes needing that time to yourself in your couch, and also working on in your brother's backyard as well. I was wondering if there's anything else you found, very helpful for you to manage a lot of those emotions.
Okay, so a really good friend of mine has been awesome. just by really listening and just sort of staying present.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I've funnily enough found acupuncture quite calming because for me the whole thing just hyped my nervous system up to the max.
Mm-hmm.
So funnily enough, getting some needles poked into it helped.
Calming needles.
Because the whole experience for me was quite physiological. Saunas as well.
Ooh.
I found them really relaxing of my body. They got my breathing going back again
because
I think my system sort of froze. A few unhealthy practices in there as well, which I could go into. Too much drinking. I think just really... really just knowing that this is really bad and knowing that can't be fixed, but that with time we adapt.
Mm. Yeah. It sounds like having that friend and how important connection is and having that person, having that space to be heard and listened to, and sure you still have value and you still have opportunities yourself. As you said, it's not about us and that opportunity and that connection. Was a really big grounder for you.
Yeah, and another thing that was really good too is shout out to the Hope Centre.
Shout out Life Matters.
Is coming along as a participant in the suicide bereavement group.
Aww.
So good to sort of be my new self for an hour or two. To just be with people who understand.
I think, you're a great example, Cleo, of the peer model, being a service user to now a service giver. And there's, I think we often think of in health that if you have struggled with something, you can't then be on the other side. But the peer model really shows that you can need help. And give help as well. We are human, and I know you've put a lot of time and effort and work into being in a place that you can provide that help for others. A great role model for that pathway.
Thanks, I love it.
Noosa, do you have any strategies or practices that you would like to share?
My faith has been with me since day one. So prayer. And my faith has got me through all my dark times, including grief. So thank you, Jesus.
Nice.
I think an important part of the grief process for me is I'm someone that regardless of how I feel the grief, whether it's like a person or an animal or the circumstances around it, I feel grief hard. It's one of those things that I really struggle to deal with and can kind of spiral me a wee bit. I think actually talking about it and actually feeling the feels is really important because you're right, Cleo, like it's not necessarily about us, but it affects us and attending to those feelings that it brings up in us is important. Just crying. Even crying was really important for me.
Good.
Yeah, and remembering and sharing happy memories was also quite important. But, gosh, it's challenging. I remember, when I found out that my friend had passed away that week, I don't know why it was that week, I got inspired to get into running again. And I was running from, not running at all to running, 8 to 10 to plus Ks. And I was the grieving body can do really interesting things.
But it worked for you.
It did.
You know what I mean? And love that.
It did, yeah. Do you have anything that you would like to add?
No, I really appreciate all your stories and I'm sure our listeners do as well.
Perfect. Well, we've got a couple more questions that we'd love to cover with our guests today, but before we do so, we are going to jump to an ad break from our sponsor.
At Anytime Fitness Dunedin, our mission is to raise the self-esteem of the world. A healthy lifestyle doesn't start and stop at the gym. It starts with a plan, which is why we offer solutions that incorporate fitness,
nutrition, well-being and recovery. With three local clubs to choose from, with 24/7 access, we're certain you'll find your fit. Contact us today to get started. Call 03 455 0013 or visit anytimefitness.co.nz.
Welcome back to the Hope Centre podcast. Yeah, we've been having some quite deep but quite inspiring conversations so far with our lovely guests, and we've got a couple more questions that we would kind of like to cover with the rest of our time. I'm wondering, Noosa and Cleo, what advice you would give to others who might be considering seeking help?
You did touch on it just before the ad was talking about it. When we are feeling lost and alone, oh my gosh, I'm about to sing a song.
Feel free, not copyright.
When I'm lost. So when you're feeling lost and alone, I find that we don't want to bother people with our problems. Like, you know, we're like, I want to talk to someone, but I think they've got a lot going on. But the reality is people do care. People do care. There are people out there who will listen. We actually even have a 1737 text call who people there to talk to. So as easy as it sounds, but talk to someone. We're here too. Life matters. But yeah, there is a lot of support in our community, which is available. So seeking support, talking to a friend, getting out there and just cry.
Yeah, if someone is considering seeking help, I'd say just do it if that's what they want. Talking is amazing. It does make a difference. I think just the feeling of sharing. We are a social animal. Somehow the fact that other people understand us and that we can understand mutually does make a difference. It's not for everyone. There are all sorts of different things. But if someone felt like it, absolutely. And at the Hope Centre, that's why we're there. That's for people to come and see us or make an appointment.
It's a plug for the Hope Centre, but I think generally, I don't know where the people who listen to our podcast are necessarily listening from, but peer support in general, or people who have got, you know, whether it's a support group that's not peer support specifically, but those people who have got shared experience, I think is, you know, it can feel like one of those things that you don't really feel like many other people are going through, but then you talk to people who have experienced it, and it's quite cathartic to talk to someone who's had the same or similar experience.
But I find as well that all our shoes are different. But the feelings and the emotions are pretty similar. So just sharing that is special.
And I think on that too, you know, as you said, the experiences and bringing it back to those emotions is really important. Of, you know, it can be important for us to understand how other people manage or how those other emotions manifest in them, to recognize, like, one, we are different in how this happens, but two, a lot of what we come back is that connection of feeling. And we have that mutuality of feeling. We can understand that feeling even if we can't understand the reaction.
Absolutely.
Just feel the feels.
Feel it.
And I think that's also important because, you know, like, you guys have experienced that suicide grief really closely. I think there is the possibility of people listening to this who may have, you know, experienced suicide grief or know someone that's suicided but not been a brother or a sister or a partner and, you know, those connections. And I think it's valid to feel the way you feel around a situation, you know. If it's impacting you, it's impacting you, and it's okay to seek help to talk about the way that it's impacting you, because I don't necessarily feel like anyone's grief is invalid.
And in saying that as well, like, it could be grief, not even just, it's not just suicide bereavement, it's grief, any grief,
For sure.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm, the feelings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the circumstances, but as humans, we do have shared feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So we can understand each other
mm-hmm.
regardless of our circumstances and experiences.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. I think because of the way that suicide is kind of talked about, it is something that does seem quite big and scary and mm. hard to talk about. And I think, you know, it's only natural to hear if someone has suicided or, you mm. know, this person that, you know, by distance, like, to feel, oh, like, mm. gosh, that's really tough. So... Mm. You know, it's hard on everybody, and everybody deserves to be supported through that mm. process.
Mm.
Mm. I'm wondering, through the grief journey for you guys, what were some unhelpful, well-intentioned messages you heard, and what would have you liked to hear instead?
Oh, the one I heard a lot was, "Time will heal."
Mm.
What a joke. It could be that time heals, but when you're grieving, the last thing you want someone to hear is things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
The intentions are right.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have rather heard, you know, it's going to be a long journey, but know mm-hmm. that we are here for you.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. Not, it'll get easier. It'll get better. Like,
mm-hmm.
it's weird. It's kind mm-hmm. of an odd
mm-hmm.
thing, yeah.
Because mm-hmm. it can sort of minimise the... person in a way who
mm.
died
mm.
Mm. minimize what you're feeling at the moment
mm-hmm.
like oh you'll get over it
mm. yeah mm.
yeah yeah for me oh it was only a couple of weeks into it someone said life goes on
mm.
It's a bit of a bad phrase there, isn't it?
Yeah.
And once again, well meant, you yeah. know, of course. And I think the similar message, I love the way you put that, Noosa.
Mm.
Yeah, I think it's more a case of some things will never change, like, the fact of the suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm not necessarily saying suggesting someone says this, but the philosophy is yes, this is a forever thing.
Mm-hmm.
It will never be changed.
Mm.
But we adapt.
Yeah.
We oh. adapt with all sorts of different things. We yeah. adapt.
Mm.
Yeah. I've got a guest at the Hope Centre and she's bereaved by suicide. And she's got as a mantra something I referred to in passing one day, which is, you won't always feel this crap.
Mm.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's the guts of it, eh?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I think what I really appreciated about what you said there, Cleo, of, you know, it was very direct. And although, you know, left behind and sitting in that grief, you might feel very fragile. How you talked about was still seeing people as strong, and even if they feel like they can't do much, talking to them as if they can, and putting that mm. belief in themselves that
mm.
yeah, this is a hard road ahead,
mm.
But it's not something that we can change.
Yeah.
But the power is in you and the connections that we can mm. have.
Mm.
Mm.
It sounds like mental health overall, like growing up in the 90s, you know. If someone's going through a hard time, you hear, oh, hard enough, or mm. she'll be right. So mm. it's just getting into their shoes and be like, you know, empathy, right?
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Mm.
And I think a good message for those out there who, yeah, might be supporting someone or aware of someone who is struggling with grief or bereavement, that, yeah, don't be scared to talk to these people and say things as they are.
Mm.
People are a lot stronger than we often think they can be.
Mm. Mm-hmm. For people who may not understand the depth of grief after a suicide, what would you like them to know about the emotional experience that accompanies such a loss?
As hard as it is, especially hearing how suicide has that, what's it, I think it's like the domino effect sometimes.
The ripple effect.
Yeah, the ripple effect. It's hard to know that can happen, and I've seen it happen, like I've heard it in the news, but I don't want to be that person. And like I said, having the kids is my motivation, and for them to have to look up to me, I have to put on my strong hat, but also remembering how important it is to get that me time to actually grieve. And, you know, the question totally just went out of my head. What was it? So I guess like we went over sex support, you're not alone. Like you really are not alone. And it's okay to be sad. You know, we've lost someone that we've loved, and we've, you know, we plan futures with, et cetera, and an unfortunate mental health is real. So, yeah, just everything that I've just said.
And I like the point you touch on about the heightened suicide risk for bereaved people.
Mm-hmm.
It's bereaved people can be 8 times more likely to die by suicide not long after the suicide than people not bereaved by suicide. I think for people who may not understand the depth of grief, what would you like them to know about the emotional experience? Probably the fact that it's a bit like a grenade going off inside your head and your brain being splattered, but I hope this isn't too graphic, against your skull. And then, okay, it's got to reform, you know, somehow. And so it just changes everything, really. But that said, my experience was complicated by the fact that 5 weeks after my brother's suicide, my husband tried to leave me. And then there were various other attempts, for the year after that, and he finally did a year later. So I was dealing with two things, you know.
Two life-changing things.
Yeah. So I think that's like saying that I find it hard to tease out the impact of just suicide bereavement. However, further, I think there are complications that occur for many people, like with your wee ones, Noosa. There can be all sorts of other ramifications, that ripple effect, domino out. I think, like, even just after my brother's death, I was looking at the internet, as you do, and joined a page for people who are bereaved by sibling suicide, and there were people who were saying, oh, it's been a year for me, you know, I can't believe, you know, how awful I feel. And I remember thinking in my sort of shock state and also recently non-bereaved state, oh, but how come you feel so awful after a whole year?
Yeah.
And so the big thing I've learned is things last for a long time and they change. Yes, we adapt. And I think I'd probably like to broaden this lesson to all sorts of life's distress, you know? And I look at old people now and I think, whoa, you legends, you know?
Regardless of it all, they're still there.
Yeah. Everyone, really. We're all carrying our stuff.
That's just making me think of something I said to you, it's probably a couple of weeks ago now. I was like, what is it was kind of said as an off-the-cuff joke, but I was like, what is the point in living when people are just going to die all the time and I'm going to feel sad all the time? And you said something along the lines of it's about the memories and the time that you spend with those people. And I think that's something, it's in the back of my mind. You know, it's the purpose of living is loving and building these really good connections. And I think it has made me, reflect on older people that I support, older people I see and be like, wow, you've been through so much loss in life and you're still here and you're still going. And I Yeah.
Mm.
Gave me some admiration for those people. Yeah.
It's better to have loved and lost than not to have loved at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
And like you said, like keeping the memories going. And that's what I do with my kids. I still talk to them about their dad.
Mm.
And by bringing up the memories, by bringing up the good things, what made him a cool person. So keeping him alive that way in a positive way. And that's what it's about. It's just, just turning, flipping it, their grief into like something happy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we've got one more question written down that we'll answer. We'll answer quite quickly because we are running out of time. Oh. We've only got 10 minutes left, would you believe it? I'm wondering, because you know it can be hard to see forward and can be hard to see the future following a loss. I'm wondering, was there a specific moment or turning point where you began to feel a glimmer of hope again?
Now there's that word, hope. Mm-hmm. I've always had hope. Being with the faith that I my faith that I have, hope has always been what's kept me going forward. And now I'm working at the Hope Centre, spreading out all this hope with these cool-ass people. So, yeah, no, I'm grateful for hope.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great. That's really nice. Yeah, for me, it was, I think, at around 6 months, the six-month mark. I remember poking my head out the bathroom window in the morning and enjoying the morning smell and actually thinking, "Oh, I just got a wee dose of pleasure then."
Yeah.
And then, funnily enough, a real turning point for me has just been, you know, maybe the last 2 or 3 months. And, yeah, this new workplace, really good team of very real and down-to-earth good people as well has been part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Sorry. I just want to, clarify as well, like, you are a part of that, Cleo. And, yeah, really hearing from both of you is those moments of keeping those memories alive, but also be able to, you know, when a loss and having this grief happens, things seems like it's going double speed for so long and things can seem like a blur. But it's those moments when you find yourself slowing down and be able to smell the air or reflect more on relationships that it's, that time helps to slow down back to a manageable level and an enjoyable level.
Cool. Yeah. All right. We will go into wrapping up the end of the podcast, but before we do so, we'll hear another quick word from our sponsor.
Anytime Fitness Dunedin is here to raise the self-esteem of the world. Whether you're new to fitness or getting back into a routine, now's the time to put yourself first. With a supportive community, 3 local clubs, flexible membership options and access anytime, we're here to help you reach your goals. Get in touch with our friendly team today. Call 03-455-0013 or visit anytimefitness.co.nz.
Thank you, Anytime Fitness, for that message there. Again, I really appreciate Cleo and Noosa for coming on to the podcast. Before we do wrap up, do you have any final thoughts or messages you'd like to share to those who might be struggling?
Mental health matters.
Life be lifin'.
Life be lifin'.
I think we've reaffirmed some pretty solid messages throughout the podcast, you know. It's 100%. Okay to feel the way that you're feeling. It's okay to reach out for help. And you've got people there for you. There's always somebody there.
And can I just say, like, there is no cap on how long the grief has been.
Yeah.
Whether it be 30 years, 3 years, 1 year, grief is grief.
Yeah.
Quite different for everyone as well.
For sure, for sure.
We at the end of each podcast, we do a final five because you have been here before, Noosa. Yes. We might direct this towards Cleo. The final five quick fire questions to get your thoughts and your perspectives on things.
Hit me.
Perfect. What does well-being mean to you?
Well-being, I think, is balance, a little bit of everything.
Nice. Is there anything you do that brings you a sense of calm, balance, or peace?
Yeah. I love finding an open doorway and standing in it and putting both my hands up into the door frame and like walking my body forwards and stretching my pecs.
It's a real good stretch.
Aww.
Yeah.
Aww. If you could make one rule that everyone had to follow, what would it be?
Oh, I'm so excited by this. Oh, I've been waiting for this. I would love it if we didn't keep left just on the road, but on the footpath as well.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, because I walked past somebody today and I had this thought. I just thought it was an implicit rule that if we were doing this on the road, we would do it on the footpath. Mm. But I've walked around the corner by work so many times and almost smack banged right into somebody.
Yeah.
Spot on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Not good enough, guys. Come on now.
My partner isn't from New Zealand, so does keep riding. So all the time I have to go, keep left.
As long as she's trying.
Thank you. I feel really validated by the group.
What would you tell your younger self now?
Yeah. What I'd tell my younger self is you are no worse than anyone else. You know better than anyone else. Mm-hmm. You know worse than anyone else, you know?
Amen.
When we're young, we can feel really uncertain and unsure, but everyone is of equal value.
Yeah.
Next question is to leave a question for the next guest. What would you like to know?
So, okay, how much time have I got? Not much?
How much time do you need?
Less by even asking that question.
Take your time.
When I was a kid at school, I had this lovely teacher. She was a nun. And I had done something silly. I was about 11 or something. And got overexcited. And she came up to me in the playground at lunchtime. I was sitting there with all my friends. And she came up. And in front of them, she apologised.
Mm.
Like, for her role in it, and dumbfoundedly, I just sort of, didn't really say anything, you know. But it's just stuck with me as such a role model of great humility and great kindness.
Mm.
And so my question for the next guest is, what is a lovely kindness that you remember either experiencing or witnessing?
That's a great question.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness. I'm going to have to think for that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Time.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. That's a real thinker.
Yeah. Cool. Well, final thank you to you guys for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Respect. Yeah. The two of you do a really good job.
Thank you.
We've really enjoyed having you, and I think it's been nice to, I've enjoyed all of the podcasts we've recorded, but it's been nice to talk about something that's quite real and quite raw and quite deep. Mm-hmm. And just to reaffirm, if anybody has been impacted by the podcast today, you can reach out to us at Life Matters, the Hope Centre. Our phone number is 027-240-0114 if you would like to reach out. You can also reach Lifeline on 0800-543-354 or free text 1737 for after-hours support. Thank you, Omri, for joining me on the podcast again. Woohoo.
Thank you, Anna. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah. What will we say about Hope Centre at the moment? It's quite a dynamic space, and we can't really talk about it on the podcast yet, but there's a lot of changing, and we've lost a couple of staff members, and the place is just feels a bit chaotic at the moment, so I haven't had a lot of time nor energy to put into the podcast planning, and Omri's been doing a lot of that. Yes. So round of applause to Omri. Thank you very much.
Yay.
Thank you to ORFM for hosting us once again, to Life Matters and to Anytime Fitness for sponsoring the podcast.
Yes, thank you.
That is all from us this week. Remember, even the darkest night will end and the sun will rise.
Mm-hmm.
See you later.
See ya.
Ka kite.
Tō whasi whoa.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to our Hope Centre podcast. The most important message we can leave you with today is that it's okay to ask for help and support. You can contact us at Life Matters on 027 240 0114 by phone or text, or send us a message on our Facebook page. You can also contact us through our website. Just look up lifematters.org.nz. You can also drop in to see us at 63 Hanover Street. We're open every day except Mondays. From Wednesday to Sunday, we're open until 9 p.m. If you need support out of those hours, free call or text 1737. If you'd like to listen again or hear other episodes in this podcast, go to oar.org.nz or wherever you get your podcasts. See you soon.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.